Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsession
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hello and welcome to the Dork Forest. I was in my hotel room in Tacoma, Washington, and a ranger of the Dork Forest said, "Hey, can I be on?" And I said, "Yeah, if scheduling permits, everyone can be on the Dork Forest." And so she drove from Seattle to Tacoma, and we knocked it out, you guys. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com. JackieCation.com has all more info than you can shake a stick at. DorkForest.com just has the show, and then there's a donation button, and then links back to JackieCation.com, where the merch page is. Like, if you were to want CDs of my stand-up DVD, the latest DVD, or Dork Forest t-shirts, which are all union-made here in America by Americans. So they run big, just so you know. Anyway, all prices include shipping, including there's some weird international thing going on. Anyway, you can always email me, Jackie@JackieCation.com, if you have any questions about any of the merch or anything about the show. Let's do the credits. Mike Rickberg composed and sang that song you just heard. He is going to sing again his lyrics to the Mexican Hat Dance. Patrick Brady is going to fix this audio. And Vilmos works on the website, JackieCation.com. There is an Amazon banner on JackieCation.com where you can order through that Amazon banner, and the Dork Forest gets kickback for it. So I would appreciate that if you're ordering from Amazon, which we all do, and you're thinking of me. What the heck? It doesn't cost you extra just to get a percentage kickback to the Dork Forest. Other than that, there's actual donation buttons on both dorkforest.com and jackiecation.com. If you like the show and you can, feel free to donate to the show. I would totally appreciate it. If you want to do it monthly, you got to figure out how to do that yourself, though, because I'm yet to figure out. It's not hard. It's just time, and I haven't made the time to do it, sadly, yet. Anyway, I'm very much looking forward to this episode, so let's just talk to you briefly that this week in stand-up, I'm opening for Maria Bamford in Portland, Oregon, 9th and 10th at the Helium Comedy Club. And then I am doing kind of just a stand-up show, I guess, with Tom Clark is opening for me. He's a great comic from Milwaukee. That's in Upland, California, on the 13th of February. So let's get into the show already. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm in my hotel looking over the beautiful Tacoma, Washington Valley. Is that right, Megan Steele?
Yeah, that's a beautiful between Kent and Des Moines, and just watch almost live.
Des Moines, Washington?
Oh, yes. It's beautiful with the crack rows. And
it is. Just, is it not beautiful?
Well, yes. Yes. I'm trying not to hate on my hometown.
Right. Don't hate on your hometown. It's actually quite pretty. I was just talking to my brother, and he was like, Tacoma, Washington. That's where John Candy was from in the movie Volunteers.
Yes, he
was. And I was like, well, go deep. Go deep into the long boxes, Russ Cation.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so welcome to the program. Welcome to the Dork Forest. You listened to the show, and so you were like, I'm a dork. I live in Washington State.
Can I
come and talk? And I was like, you can.
I can't tell you how excited I am to really lay out my nerd cred.
Do
and
it.
Try and not just stare at myself, because there's a big mirror, and I'm a very fascinating person.
Right, you are fascinating.
Oh,
how about that?
That's the ironing board.
I'm
better choice.
Right, ironing board and the clip, but it should be less distracting than staring at yourself and going, what is happening there with that eyebrow?
I am awesome.
Yes.
What's all the makeup going on there?
How's that?
So thank you so much. I wish to say that as a fellow band nerd,
right? A little marching band nerd, or concert band, or both.
I run deep. I played alto saxophone until I found a trumpet in the secondhand store for $5.
Oh, very nice.
And after doing some math with my mom, who didn't want to pay for the rent for the saxophone anymore.
Oh, nice work.
$70 up front, and I learned how to play trumpet for the 8th grade band.
Oh, there
concert.
You go.
Yes.
Already 8th grade.
Well, yeah, so 6th.
So 5th or 6th
yeah,
to 8th.
Exactly.
You were alto sax, yeah. Reed instrument.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So you put the reed in your mouth, keep it there for a while.
Well, you gotta soak it up. Gotta soften it. Sure.
And the people who would share reeds, I was like, apparently there's a level of cooties that I couldn't possibly, even in
Who the hell is sharing? I mean, that feels like a Hobbity kind of thing where people share pipes in a desperate time, but not reeds.
Well, they shared Coca-Colas at lunch, and maybe some of them were dating. I'm not sure of the details.
Okay. All right, if they were already swapping spit in sort of a love interest kind of way, it's fine. Even though it is still weird. I don't want to share a toothbrush with people.
None of them were ever fashion models. I don't know why anybody would want to really have any interest.
Right, but they were sharing reads.
Well,
it came up?
Well, the popular ones were.
It was a thing in your band to share reads?
Well,
tell me more. Tell me more of this.
You know how girls like to create a group and then select one?
I've read about it. Yes. It's like a Heathers-y kind of.
Very. And I can tell that my music from my iPod is still playing, and it's distracting me.
Oh, because you can...
I'm a genius.
We can only hear our own iPod and our own phones like crazy.
It's like barking dogs. I don't care about
it. Did it work?
People.
Or did you just unplug your headphones?
Yeah, short version. So in the eighth grade, with the trumpet that was not shiny, I want to lay out the dorky nerd cred here. So
you want to do some dork origin? Go for it.
I do. Thank you very much.
Sure.
So that was and changing over from alto sax, in which every third person played out. There's a lot of alto saxes in the band.
Oh, yeah. Especially in the I don't know why they do that, but they're like, no, you should play clarinet. And I play clarinet until like 9th, 10th grade.
Yeah, you have all the alternate fingerings in the universe.
I was the worst clarinet player in the world. I was, by the way, a mediocre trumpet player.
Okay, well.
Because I too went to trumpet.
Well, I did marching band.
Yeah.
I did jazz band, that was only in 9th grade by invitation
only.
If
you got into jazz band, you were actually pretty good.
With
the alto sax or with the trumpet?
With the trumpet.
Okay.
The trumpet. So, thank you. I want to say that the love was there. Maybe
right.
Some of the practicing might not have been so close.
Well, that's it. It's all about practicing. I want to hang out. It's a lot like comedy. I just totally, really do just want to hang out.
Well, and I'd like to be good naturally, like Harry Potter on the broom. You know, why can't it
just be a gift?
Exactly.
Just some sort of, yeah.
So everybody else says they don't have to practice and they're right the first time.
Right. But you made jazz band, so you must have been pretty good.
Well, I had a solo, Take Me on a Sentimental Journey. And if you go to YouTube, you can hear the tune. I don't know if you can hear an instrumental version of it, at least for free, which is my favorite price.
Oh, okay. All right. So, so you're like, go listen to the song.
Yes.
Take me on a sentimental journey.
Okay.
But you had a jazz
trumpet solo.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was hoping that you had actually your trumpet solo on YouTube. Not so.
Oh, no. That
would have been too much. Would have been the greatest.
I'm sure it exists, and if I get famous by doing something horrible, I probably will. It's been recorded. I just don't own the possession of that recording.
Okay.
But to be fair, my mom went. I can't remember if my dad went, but he hated sitting on bleachers, which is, if you think.
Well, that's an excellent excuse not to come see your child.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Games at 4.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to church.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to.
First daddy's back.
My dad would always say, kickoff is at noon.
Exactly.
Why are we going to church? Well.
Yeah, it's a priority. Being what they are, but my aunt and uncle went as well, and they went to several of them. So I want to give them props, and I don't think my grandparents went to that one. But that's in the 9th grade, in which I was in a Star Trek fan club.
Okay,
I had a character; she had a name.
Okay, you made up your own
character.
Yes.
Okay.
Did everybody in the fan club make up a character?
I think so.
Because it was part of the club?
The problem with 9th grade is that we can't drive when you live by a farming village called Snohomish.
Snohomish, Washington.
Yes. We lived outside and you can't just walk to other people's houses because we weren't townies. So
right.
There was a lot of in-school lunch drama. And I had that. So there in that year, there was also a Star Trek, and I'm pronouncing it wrong again because I'm nervous, but that we went to a convention,
right.
And my mom went as well to supervise her 9th grade nerdy daughter, which was very nice of her. And I realize now that maybe it was a little bit of a spa feeling for her because she could leave her other three kids to stare at my dad. It was a weekend off.
Yeah.
In which my dad must have been like, what are you doing? I can't see the TV.
Right.
Get daddy a beer and make your own dinner.
Well, right.
I knew how to cook and mom knew how to cook. And
the other three?
I probably learned how to dial dominoes.
Exactly. I'm sure he ate a lot of sort of delivery.
I suspect that that was dad's solution to it because that there's probably, and not so much the game for him, but it would have been 60s war movies, 70s sci-fi, like anything with Charlton Heston, or 70s westerns, or really cop movies with Clint Eastwood in them or John Wayne.
Right.
Yes.
That guy might have been a dad.
Yeah.
He sounds like a classic dad.
Very classic working
well
class.
Well played.
Move
what
your
was
head.
The Star Trek thing was?
Well, that was, he was a fan of Star Trek, but he was the kind who would watch the TV and not go to the conventions. I always go all in.
Right.
On my nerd out. So we've got the band. We have all the different kinds of bands. Marching band wasn't
what,
really great.
What Star Trek were you? Was this original Star Trek that you were watching?
We watched both original and
no the convention.
Oh, the convention.
Was the club about original Star Trek?
Oh, thank you for the level here. No, it was Next Generation.
Okay.
Because I mean ninth grade. This was in the '90s for
okay.
me.
Okay.
So it's
there you go.
That and to be fair, remember when Matt Myra said that his dad looked like Jonathan
Who's
Frakes?
Matt Myra?
Matt Myra, the comedian. Oh, that was. I thought that was with you. That okay. Well, he talked about
it. Could have been.
Is
he the comedian that's on Nerdist?
Yes. Yes, he is.
Okay. He came on and talked about
James Bond.
Bond.
Yes.
Oh, that was okay. Hundreds of episodes ago.
Well,
it's all kind of a blur, but good for you.
I listen to them a lot.
You listen to them. And, sure. And I was like, Matt Myra, that sounds really familiar. I haven't seen, you know what? I think I just saw him last week. Too,
oh, really?
I did Nerdist. At midnight. So.
Well, so to
he's wandering around.
Yes, doing things. And when he said that, and if it wasn't with you, I listened to your podcast next, so it did blend together here.
Sure.
Kind of like a couple of chocolate kisses all together. But my dad, actually, if you needed like a cultural touchstone, be like Jonathan Frakes, full beard, 6 foot, brunette, didn't talk too much. Yeah, the dad.
So, okay, so that's kind of what he looked like.
Got
so,
a visual right there.
So, but
definitely.
you were in the Star Trek club,
yes.
and then you were in marching band.
Yes.
And then...
Future Farmers of America.
Sure.
And then, that's an easy A, I'll tell you that much right there. You just have to acknowledge the fact that I wear things that have to be made from, at some point, from the earth. This is awesome. I mean, the leather bag was made from a cow at some point?
Right.
A plus. So.
What, I didn't know Future Farmers of America was a class.
Oh, it is a class.
It's a class.
And it's a club, too.
And it's, and you get grades for it?
Yeah.
All right.
It was
I know
actually...
nothing about the future farmers of fucking America. It's just a bunch of fucking farmers, I assume, right? Who want to be future
there's
farmers?
There's a lot of Fs.
Yeah, there's a lot of Fs going on. But what?
So that club in the ninth grade and then in 10th grade marching.
No. Talk to me about the future farmers of America.
Okay. Well.
So how many people are in it? What's the class like? You just go to the class and learn about agriculture?
Yeah, learn about it. Well, it's Snohomish is a farming town. So there's of course,
you guys had a farm?
My family had a very small farm.
Right.
We had like chickens and geese and
so you
a
would
sheep
go and talk about the different animals you had
yeah,
or
and
other people would talk about the plants that they grew
it's
and
like 4-H.
Other people would talk about the different buildings they would build or the different like tractors they would own
tractors or if it was a barn then you might have to talk about that. We actually at one point talked about the difference between a metal barn and a wooden barn because the sales stay with me
so,
your
well,
sales
what
background
the difference? What is the difference between a metal barn
well,
and a wooden
things
and a wooden
burn
barn?
Things burn in a barn. And there's horses. So the sales pitch is that, well, the new metal barns, that they're not flammable.
Okay.
The problem is that they're not nearly as structurally sound once whatever's inside is on fire, like straw. And so a wooden barn, you can go in and try and get the horses or whatever else that is, or your cows or whatnot, and try and drag them out terrified. In a metal barn, at least when I was learning this, that it was the structural integrity was going to fail in a metal barn much, much quicker than in a wooden barn.
And it was just going to cook your horses and cows?
Well.
Or just it was going to collapse onto itself?
Collapse faster.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh,
absolutely.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so we learned those types of things. Also in the 10th grade, I then went to the ROTC, which is Marine Corps. So junior, MCJROTC, Marine Corps Junior Reserve Officer Training Corps. And I have to say, two best teachers I had in all of high school.
Okay.
Both served Vietnam, several tours, men who knew the difference.
Both guys?
Yeah, both men.
Okay.
That they're, unfortunately, they both retired, which is a shame, but that in high school, in which there can be so much pathetic drama by the grown-ups, that it was particularly cool to work with two people who'd look you right in the eyes and knew the difference. And
the difference between what?
The difference between pathetic drama and something that's a personal code of honor or your best work ethic. Or
what you're saying is how they inspired you or something?
Yeah,
or?
how they inspired us to actually be honorable, integrity filled adults, and not just to be talked down to or barked orders at. That it was, I really.
So they talked to you like adults or people? Or?
Yes, and people who were worthy of being trained and not just talked at. That they had.
And so what was the ROTC training? What was the actual, like, this sounds like a fascinating high school, by the way, where you have yet to have a class where you learned how to read or write. It's band, it's Star Trek.
Dare you.
It's, well, I'm sure there was some reading and writing going on, but you were like, I have no interest in those things. What I wish to do is to train and to farm.
Close
and
order drill.
And yes. All, yes. And so that's what you marched and stuff?
Yeah, we did. We actually did close order drill.
Which you had learned from band already.
Well, the problem with band is that you have to keep your hands up on your instrument. And when you march in any type of military training, that you have to move your arms opposite of your feet. So you have to swing your arms.
You're not marching with a gun?
I was an unarmed drill.
Okay.
But so they taught both armed and unarmed drill teams.
Okay, so you didn't have to hold your instrument.
Correct.
So you had to do something with your hands.
Exactly. And that was a learning technique, because I had learned how to hold my arms exactly still. And of course, the mockery was immediate.
Why?
Well, because I wasn't doing it correctly in ROTC.
Okay. Oh, because it was different.
Swing your arms, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not that it burns, but it was a memory that it was burned into. It's like,
sure,
you had to
sure.
retrain the muscles.
You got to retrain the muscles.
So if I can.
But you knew how to guide right going in.
I knew left step from right foot.
That's
absolutely.
It. Mm-hmm.
About face.
So there should have been some celebration of your knowledge.
Maybe. I don't know. The high school kids oftentimes are not very nice to each other.
Right. So it wasn't, they didn't mock you. The other kids mocked you.
Correct.
The adults didn't.
No.
Okay.
The ROTC trainers. So and to be fair, both of those men were on my resume until I was 27. So it indicates.
As sort of like
references
mm-hmm. of. Okay, they're like, well, these guys are good guys. You can call them and ask them that I'm not a jackass.
Exactly.
Right.
And impressive. Full bird colonel and a sergeant major.
Okay.
So lastly, I was employed. You talk about the work ethic and being in sales, that I started doing the babysitting services at 12.
Sure.
As opposed to just doing it for free for my mom.
Right.
And then,
so you charged your mom or you went out? You went out of the home.
Oh, yeah. I went out of the home.
You got to go out of the home to get any cash.
Exactly.
Yeah. In the home.
I have to save up.
There's food and beverages that are being provided as your payment.
Yeah, and pick up after your siblings, I'm sure that do something.
Housekeeping. I could also do that as a job.
Exactly. So worked and started at 15 at a local agricultural store. So it was a wholesale.
What cultural?
Agricultural. We planted ferns.
Okay.
So since that time, the employment, and then at 16, I went to go work for an aftermarket automotive shop. Which sounds awesome. It
doesn't sound awesome. It sounds weird. What does that mean? Aftermarket auto. It's like people rip apart old junk cars and then sell parts?
That's what
I would think it is.
I would wish it was that sexy. It was not. It was basically, you know, like kind of your basic Shucks Auto Supply or Al's Auto Supply or.
Like a privately owned auto supply place, but were they new items that you were selling, or what do you mean aftermarket?
Aftermarket is, say that one of us is a mechanic and my alternator dies and I don't want to go to the dealership and pay full price, so
okay.
I go to a basic auto parts shop and buy an aftermarket.
Oh, okay.
The alternator and then install it myself.
But it has parts, but they're brand new parts.
They're new. Some of them are refurbed. So
right.
That they've sent back to the factory, so they're not shiny, but they're sold with a warranty.
Got it.
Because I drove 60s automobiles. That my first car was a 1968 Cadillac Coupe de Ville.
A 68 Coupe de Ville?
Yeah.
Where did you get that?
I bought it from some people that I babysat for. They'd inherited it. It was the sport model. Stay with me.
Is it a two-seater or a four-seat? Sedan?
It was a two-door.
Two-door?
Yeah, because it was a coupe. The doors were roughly the size of this bed, because it was 68 before the gas
crisis.
Right.
Oh, it was enormous. It was
18 feet, 6 inches long.
Okay, wow.
472 cubic inch engine. It was the second largest Cadillac ever made.
Okay.
Functionally, a 16-year-old Megan Steele was handed rolling Detroit steel.
Sure.
And told...
A tank, essentially.
This is, and I quote this, and my father's passed on now, but I know that he would appreciate it. He told me, because he made me buy the car. I had to buy the car for $1,800, buy the insurance, and buy the gas.
Okay.
Yeah. So that meant that I worked a lot.
Yeah.
That,
And you did that at 16.
Yes.
Which is like the American dream of I'm getting my own car at 16.
Bye.
But you also have to pay for it all.
Yes.
So that's very, that's hard.
Yeah.
Harder.
It's expensive when you're
it's
making
super expensive. And you're lucky
wage.
You weren't a boy because then the insurance would have been even greater.
Exactly. That
a 68 Cadillac Coupe de Ville.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That as my father handed
How many
me,
miles did it have on it, I wonder?
Oh, less than 100,000 because it was a retirement car for a great uncle.
Okay.
And so when he passed, that it was...
Because this is in like 94, 92?
How did you guess 94? It was exactly 94.
Because you had said the 90s with Star Trek,
right.
And so I
yes.
went next generation. Yeah. Anyway.
So I, because I was poor, didn't realize how I should be ashamed for driving a...
A used vehicle.
Old vehicle.
Giant vehicle,
that
I guess.
Was for... old people, because you don't, nobody drives a Cadillac. That I didn't realize I should be ashamed and thought it was
so
awesome.
So you weren't?
No, I was not at all.
Good. That's classic Dork yeah. Forest attitude. Well played.
Thank you. And I used to roll by the people who would just try and hitch a ride with somebody who lived close by and be like, oh, well, you know, maybe you should go get a job because you're a dick to me.
It's, right?
Yeah, it's a return fire on the dictum, Megan.
Right.
But so that, and that. After a year of getting like 6 miles to the gallon,
ooh,
maybe.
Right,
I mean,
right. Yeah, yeah.
That I decided to upgrade to get a 65 Ford pickup truck.
Okay.
In primer gray.
Okay.
From one of my dad's friends.
Right.
It had a smaller engine. It only had 390 cubic inches.
Okay.
And a two-barrel carb, so it got like 12 miles to the gallon. It
there
was amazing.
You go. That is amazing.
That was
what
big.
Year was the Cadillac?
68.
And so the truck was 65, so
yeah.
It was even older.
Yes.
That's
uh-huh.
weird.
You know,
you're going back in time. ended up with like a Studebaker in the early 2000s, and it was a 57. It was beautiful.
Cool. You could you could tap dance on the roof, wouldn't even make a dent. Awesome. So that's kind of the background for me, and I now work in
Did you work on it?
You know, I can
Did
do, I can check fluids, I can change wiper blades, and I can take a look and say that V-belt looks like it's frayed, but I'm not a trained mechanic.
So you can, but you know enough to keep it in good running order.
Yes.
Is what you're telling me.
To say.
I can do that too. I'm a big fan of an oil change.
Yeah.
And if a belt is unbuckled, I'll go talk to somebody.
Exactly. So. And say, hey, Dad, I'll buy the part. Can you fix my truck for me?
Because he could do it.
Yeah. And I would have to touch his tools. And you know,
he doesn't like that.
There's many generations of men within my family that you don't touch
the tools. They're
exactly not touch
where
it, you can't mess it up.
There you go.
Don't mess
nice
up Daddy's.
Slogan. Yeah. Yes.
Yes, exactly. So in that background, and now it's, I know you're going to be very surprised as a local lifetime Puget Sound. I now work in aerospace. I'll be vague about the rest of that. But
oh, do you work
yes.
in aerospace? Do you work with because I Andy has several friends who work at JPL.
Yes.
And so you work on spaceships?
No.
Or do you work on airplanes?
I do
it's
build aircraft.
You help build aircraft?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So. Because this area has like an Air Force base.
Oh, yes, we have several.
Okay. Yeah, because
yes.
there was the show last night at the Tacoma Comedy Club was the second show was a military show. So
oh,
you get in for free
awesome.
If you are in the military.
Jackie, give me a high five.
Thank you.
But you participated in it. So
I did participate.
Yeah,
I was there. There were drunken airmen and soldiers, and they were
hair
perfectly
high,
nice.
Hair high and tight, I bet.
High and tight.
Yep.
There was perfectly nice young men and their dates. And perfectly nice young women and their dates.
See? Exactly.
So there you
Perfect.
Go. A lot, yeah. lot of people.
Yes.
Perfectly. And I love the club here, by the way. The Tacoma Comedy Club is actually one of the finest clubs in the country.
I heard Chris Hardwick say the exact same thing, which I was so excited
it,
when you
They do it
down.
Right. They
Perfect.
Genuinely, they're relatively new, but they've got it going on. I've never understood There's so much, like, in that, so many people live here and they mock Tacoma openly. And they're like, it's kind of a dirtbag town. And I was like, I do not see that. I see, granted, I'm on the 16th floor. So maybe, much like, I don't know, Mexico City is not considered, particularly dirtbaggy when you're sitting in a penthouse.
Well, okay.
So who knows?
I'm with you on that one.
But it is very beautiful. The whole state is very gorgeous. So,
and I bet it's even prettier at night, which is will be a wonderful segue into some pictures I want to show you.
Okay, right. Because your real dorkdom, as you were telling me, is that there is, and you realize this is an audio program.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's.
But what yes, I'm
sorry.
You yes. told me that there's, you have a dark room in your house.
I do.
So when did you get into photography?
I started photography when I was 25.
Okay.
And I was finishing college because it took me 7 years to earn my 4-year degree.
Sure.
I've always worked.
Yeah. I had five as well.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. When I heard you say that, I thought, wow, you win.
Right. It's only because my sister was pushy.
Competition.
So, yeah.
Exactly. So, and I worked with film first. I still have my Minolta SRT-202, which is a tank, probably actually did go to Vietnam.
Okay.
Yep. That, and in fact, the first photography professor I had, I told my boss that, this was after 9/11, so I was working at a high-end clothing store in sales, and
sure.
I told him I had a class, which was the truth. It just wasn't in the degree I was working on. It was in photography.
Okay.
And the professor said, always wear a strap on your camera, because if you're on the street and somebody attacks you, you can turn your camera into a weapon.
Oh, and beat them to death with it.
Yes.
Oh, and because it's because the strap gives you better, like it can be used as a flail.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You've got pushing several pounds of metal in
right.
a big old camera, and with a strap, it gives you that much more slashing room.
Right. Right. You could actually. Okay.
Yeah.
All
so
right.
I'll just put that out there. Even with the newer cameras, that push come to shove, that your camera needs to protect you sometimes.
Right.
So,
I have a tiny camera, but it's waterproof, but it's digital.
Oh, perfect. Well,
and,
that's okay.
But if I had a strap, I suppose I could. Because it's probably a good 12, 16 ounces.
Okay. Yep.
And if I clonk somebody on the head with it, yes.
It hurt.
It would it indeed hurt.
Yes.
So you took that class in the 2000s of how to develop film and everything.
It was an introductory class on vision. And so the book I just handed you is actually by.
Yeah. Answer Yourself, Night Photographs by Matthew Donovan Leonard.
Yes.
Or Leonard.
And to describe it for those who don't get to see it, that he was walking around, I believe it was Atlanta, Georgia, taking pictures, trying to decide if he was going to move or stay. And the front picture, which is my favorite picture, is three phone booths, because we're old enough to remember when phone booths were necessary. In
right,
the
but not enclosed, so
correct.
They're just against a wall.
Yep.
Okay.
And the middle one is illuminated, like maybe it's even ringing.
Okay.
And that picture right there, I found that book just as I was graduating and I had two jobs and I didn't want to keep either one of them. And then I was so poor, I couldn't afford my studio apartment. So I had to rent a room from a friend who was very generous. And
excellent.
And you ever have that roommate who it's just like, every time I turn around, I keep getting like slapped upside the head. And she's like, you know, Megan, you just sit down. Her name is Barbara.
Yep.
That just you rent the room from me and you've
and
got,
regroup.
Yeah. You're going to be fine. You're employed.
Yeah.
You just finish your
you're
degree.
Employable. You're employable. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
It'll
you're applying.
Out, but you need a minute.
Exactly. You need a breather.
Yeah.
And that for that, I always kind of keep her in my prayers and think, thank you, Barbara.
And well, you should.
Yes,
because that,
exactly.
That is a good egg. When I moved to Los Angeles, my friend Jennifer McLean had a studio apartment and she was like, you can live with me. And we'll split the studio. And my privacy was the corner. Like she had there was a curtain that blocked off her room and there was a bathroom off of it. And then there was like a living room area. And then there was a kitchenette that had a corner that had a little dinette area.
Mm-hmm.
And the dinette area was where I put my bed. And she found a bed for me.
Oh my goodness.
And our rent was like, it was $300 a piece because it was a $600 a month, studio.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived together for almost 3 years. And she eventually gave me an OXO set and said, you got to get out. And
okay.
And I was like, fair enough. 3 years later, you've done. She's like, we're in our 30s. Let's all live alone now until we get married or have partners or whatever.
Right.
And I said, fair enough. But yeah, I mean, you genuinely have to remember those people in your prayers.
Right.
They're super supportive.
And so at that time that I think the photography, which had been going on for a couple of years until that moment, that it was this feeling of that I need to be able to do one thing really well that nobody else can cut me down about.
I need to sort of go into yourself and find something.
Yes.
That's neat.
Because in sales, I can show up and I can do all my work and I can call all my customers, and sometimes that just
that's
nothing.
Fine, but this is more creative.
Exactly.
And so, yeah.
And it's
so you took a class. You took an introductory class, so it was a vision class.
It was. So, yeah, vision.
It wasn't actually like how to do photographers. It's how to recognize and how to compose a composition kind of stuff.
Yes, exactly. So that was the first class at the community college. And then I started, and Barbara was right. I was fully employable, got back into aerospace. Things were better in 2005. And I went back to the University of Washington and got they have a certificate program for working adults that is equivalent to their fine arts photography degree. So I did that for a year. And there's nothing like trying to build aircraft and then go and build art in the evenings, because you're getting home at like 10:30 at night and at work by 6 a.m. and it was commitment.
Sure, but you know, you're in your 20s, so you've got all the energy in the world.
Well, thank you. And I'm moving my books aside because I realized that I kind of want to get to some of the photography that I brought to show
you. Well, I want to learn how you learned how to develop, like you have a room in your house.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So who taught you how to develop film?
Oh, that was at the University of Washington.
So you took a class in like 2005, 2006.
Yes.
Where they were like, No one needs to know how to develop film anymore. Why are they even offering that?
Make me cry.
You don't need to, but you can, I mean, it's a beautiful thing to learn.
Exactly.
Right?
Correct.
So how do you do it? How do you develop film?
So
why does it have to be super dark? What's happening? What are the chemicals? Where do you get them?
So there is still the stores, and you actually, a lot of this is now online, so you'll have to actually buy the chemicals online. But there's trays, and the trays can go from something almost as big as the couch I'm sitting on to something more like a 12x12 tray. And that
I've seen movies where they have like cookie sheets with tall lips.
Yep. Yes.
And,
correct.
And then you kind of soak.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay.
So the photographic paper, of course, is light sensitive. And so you have to have a developer. So you have your negative, and then you have your light machine, and then you have your light sensitive paper, and then put it in. I guess that's not satisfying enough for you on the technical element.
No. Here's the thing. Okay. So you have a roll of 35mm film.
Sure.
You stick it in the camera. There's an aperture. There's an f-stop.
Mm-hmm.
You take a picture. Click. Ka-chunk, and then now you have a negative. And a
correct.
Negative is what? What is a negative? It's plastic?
It's a celluloid film that with an emulsion on top of it. So it, once it's developed, it's no longer light sensitive, but it's the...
Going in, it's real light sensitive.
Correct.
Okay.
Coming out, it is not light sensitive. But once you put it in your light machine, that the project light through it and down onto the table surface, where that, you, of course, you have to make sure that you have it oriented how you want it and focus it. And then you put your light sensitive paper. And of course, that's why they have the red light bulb.
Yeah.
So
you can see something.
Correct.
But the red light doesn't, I've always wondered about that.
Yes.
It doesn't develop. It's not real light to the paper.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. And the best part is that where people talk about in the middle of the night, don't turn on the light if you have to go to the bathroom because it makes your pupils dilate.
Yeah.
It's the same principle, that it's just not enough light. The paper isn't sensitive enough to see the red light.
And what gets destroyed? Does the negative get destroyed if real light comes in? Or does the paper get destroyed?
Oh, it would be the paper. The negative, once the negative.
The negative would be fine.
Correct.
You would just have to start over.
Yes, that's
you'd
correct.
You'd have to buy more paper.
Chemicals.
Sad, and that's why people are mad.
And yes, it's very expensive.
Hey, why are you costing me money?
Yes, and now here's an interesting one that a lot of people, that they'll talk about how that they want to do color photography or really crisp photography.
Yeah.
And the tricky part, if you're working with the film and the negatives, is that the chemical and the paper for color photography is very temperature sensitive within just a couple of degrees. And that's why most people who have a dark room, because they're nerds in their own house, it's always black and white. That
because it's a slightly easier to work with,
a lot easier to work with.
yeah,
that it's that anybody who's doing color photography in their own home is truly dedicated to it, because it's fiddly is exactly the right word.
Okay, because it has to be a certain temperature in the room as
yes.
well.
And three different tanks, because you've got three different colors.
Oh.
The CMK, CYK,
right, the cayenne,
yeah,
magenta,
cyan, yes,
cyan.
Yes.
Cayenne. Sure.
Tasty. So
nice.
I'd like to show you some pictures. And
yeah.
Again, I know that this is weird, but the each one of these actually has a principal. So this is a picture of the cool part of downtown in the, not the U District, but
in Seattle?
Yes, in Seattle, Pioneer Square.
This is a picture of Bailey. This looks like Bailey Park.
It does.
The middle ground where George Bailey is runs into the girl he gives the money to.
Absolutely. So, anyway, with the tripod, mm-hmm. and I knew I was using color film.
Okay.
But here's a trick for anybody, whether you're using film or whether you're using even just your cell phone.
Okay.
Is that if you think in black and white, but use color film. You've got even just your camera phone and you're thinking in black and white. So think shapes, think angles, think intensity, grain, tone. But then say you're using your phone and then take a look at that picture. Your color pictures will be so much more vibrant. And I don't know the principle behind it.
Right.
However, over and over again, if I'm thinking in black and white, but using color, the colors pop.
Well, here's the weird question is if you're thinking in black and white, you're thinking about shape and grain and,
tone. Yes.
Okay. What are you, when you're thinking in color, what are you thinking?
When color, it's the, and there's different schools of thought here. Certainly there's photographers who are in camp black and white and there's photographers in camp color.
Right.
That the black and white photographers talk about how the color in photography can be intoxicating and that a person can lean on the color. Like, look, there's three different colors of blue. Yeah, they use it, but sometimes that
is a little hacky
at the cost.
They find it a little, they're like, hacky. You're just doing it in color. Anyone could do that.
Yeah, anyway. That's great. That's three colors of blue. But what are you saying? That there doesn't seem to be any shape, that the principle of three thirds is not being utilized here. So
that's why
at least the four teachers I've had, or professors, I should say.
There's been enough discussion in your life to alert you to this.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so that's important in that idea of, yes, I was using a tripod standing in between north and southbound traffic. Mm-hmm. And so it's a time lapse. So you have the taillights on one side and the headlights on the other.
Okay.
But again, I was looking at perspective and forced perspective and the old part. This is some of the oldest parts of Seattle from 1889.
Okay.
And then I looked at it and I thought, and it was actually my mother who said, wow, look at the colors here. They don't scream, but they sing loudly like opera.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Very beautiful.
Yeah,
it's a very beautiful picture. It's got a lot of subtle tones, pardon me, that are distinctive, right? I mean, there's subtlety, but there is definitely a gradation that is definitive. So it's kind of interesting. So
in comparison, I want to show you. Here it is. This picture, which is taken on Capitol Hill. So it's the funky, for a while it was known as the gay neighborhood within Seattle. That definitely.
Hipsters.
Oh, yeah. It's being gentrified now. A lot of older apartment buildings from the 1920s. And this is one of the oldest apartment buildings. It's the Biltmore.
Okay.
That in the background, you can see the Space Needle.
Okay. Yeah. There it is. Oh, it's tiny Space Needle.
Yeah,
in the
exactly.
And then foreground Vespa.
Exactly. See?
Right? So it's happening.
And do you see how it's much calmer and quieter with the black and white, that it doesn't have, because it lacks color, the form and the shape, the fact that you immediately noticed it was a Vespa, that it has a quietness and a silence to it that is very different than a color picture of the city.
Does black and white, do you think black and white kind of calms down?
I find it does.
Yeah? Yes.
Yeah, the comedian John Callahan, he does cartoons out of Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
He wrote his own autobiography, which is what autobiographies are.
Right.
Thank you, Megan.
Good for him for nailing it. He stuck the landing on that.
Ooh. And he's a quadriplegic, so he definitely stuck the landing.
Oh, very well played.
But he talks about how when he was in the hospital after his car accident, and of course he can't move anything, and he would watch the night nurse, and she had a very beautiful round face, and she would watch the monitors, but also read a book, and he said that she was the unobtainable woman wrapped in shadows.
Wow.
Yes. And I read that years ago, and I thought, I'm putting that in the hip bag, and I'm keeping it for life.
Right. Yes. It's horrifying, but it's a beautiful image. I mean, you're just like, ah, that's too bad she's unobtainable.
Okay, yeah, exactly. And the darkness surrounding her.
Right.
So
But at least she was having a good time reading a book while she was working.
Exactly.
Good for her.
So what I'd like to show you now is again, early work from my first class. And that these are in black and white again. And this is my dad. So you actually get to see it.
Sure.
The assignment here was actually that the women in the class for this photography class said, go take a picture of men.
Okay.
What is men that you
try to define sort of masculinity or what manhood is to you?
Exactly.
Go. Okay.
You can't use words. Use pictures. Show me a man.
Okay.
And of course, the male students were told, show me a woman.
Oh, interesting.
And don't be hateful to be hateful. If you have something to say,
say it.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Try not to go hacky again.
Exactly.
Again, not to be a weirdo.
Exactly.
Don't be a weirdo and don't be trite. Try not to be too trite. But the thing is introductory classes, whether it's writing or photography or any of that stuff, I'm sure I had a writing class one time in college where, it was my first creative writing class and the teacher, famous, Laurie Moore, famous,
okay.
short story writer. Mm-hmm. And she said, you can write whatever you want. But I'm lying because you cannot write about suicide because I'll be awake at night worrying about you. And for the love of God, not the suicide note where it trails off in the end. Because we would hand write stuff because I went to college in the 12th century. and I did not have, I had a typewriter, but that was not, it was hand, everything was handwritten. Anyway, so that can happen with photography too, where you're like, please don't be a weirdo. Just try to capture something unique is what he was trying to.
Exactly.
Or she, what your professor, was trying to encourage.
Right. And so my dad being a very working class man, that this is a striped workman shirt and Levi's blue jeans and Red Wing work boots, that the picture that one of them is he's getting some wood from a wood pile because they had a wood burning cook stove in my parents' house.
Right.
And then the second picture, he's had his shirt rolled up, same shirt, of course, and he's leaned. The hood of my car is open and he's leaned like he's listening because he was a mechanic.
Right.
And so that what's not known is that he just, we're just going to stand next to the car. And I was like, well, don't pose, make like you're fixing it or something.
Right. Look at it, feel something.
Exactly. And he leaned in and then he made eye contact with me with this hurry up. I don't want something to break and then make me feel obligated to fix
it. Right. Then I might have to actually do something. It'd be great if nothing went wrong during this photo opportunity.
Hurry up. Daddy wants to go back to watching TV
or anything.
So with my mom.
Yeah.
That my mom, who she was, my parents were high school sweethearts, and after 31 years of marriage, had a terrible divorce. So this is before their divorce. But my mom was an at-home wife and mother and had four kids, and that she's leaning out the front door smiling. And she was always a very beautiful person and very aware of her appearance.
Mm-hmm.
So that this is in her late 40s. And it's weird when people who are always that she always tried to make sure her hair looked pretty and that she was dressed nice. And she always talked about how she didn't think she looked good in many of her pictures. And so this is one picture in which she's like, see, that's how I see myself when I look in the mirror.
I was going to say, she looks like, first of all, she looks like an intelligent, compassionate woman, quite honestly.
Exactly.
This is a great picture of anyone, quite honestly.
Well, thank you.
And this is because she's like, oh, hi, honey.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that, but she looks smart and interesting and kind of cool. So.
And, well, this is how cool she was. She actually, for a while, that before the divorce, that she was a respite care worker. So foster kids that the foster family, they either needed to take them to either to
in between foster families or.
It's more like the foster family needs the kid to go somewhere for a time. I mean, like go to the library for 4 hours or.
Oh, okay. Sort of a babysitting kind of thing.
Yeah.
In the way that you're like, I need a break from this kid who's.
Exactly.
Great. I'm on board.
Right.
Just going to need a couple of hours, which you actually need with your biological children. So why wouldn't you need that with a kid that you're also raising?
And she used to take, there was one boy that he really liked dogs and she would take him to the pound and he would pet every single dog methodically. She's like, we got to go. He's like, okay. And he would like rush to the last four because it wasn't fair to not pet every dog, that type of stuff.
That kid sounds adorable.
He was a very sweet boy.
Yeah. That's kids like, that's a kid who knows that everybody should get pet.
and choose the dogs, not the cats, because there's more dogs and you can stay at the pound a little bit longer.
Right. And the thing about animals, I mean, I don't know if you, I mean, I clearly have a history of mocking people about their pets, but let me just say that they are incredibly healing, obviously,
yes.
Because, I mean, I think people invest so much energy into their pets because they're to some extent easier than other people, because animals will just love you back.
Oh,
and
yes.
you can cuddle a cat against its will while it wrestles, and granted, not if it has claws, but I mean, you can. I remember and I'm allergic to cats, but I lived with my sister and one of her her girlfriend for a while, mm-hmm. back in the early, late 80s, early 90s. And I lived with them for a year. And I remember being so sad one day, and they had this cat, and the cat had so much fucking hair that I could barely breathe when I was around it. But I was just some sort of drama had occurred.
Right.
And I was like, just sobbing. And the cat came over and I was like, "You are about to become a pillow that I cry into, cat." And that, and the cat made me feel better.
Exactly.
Because it's just a body, a warm body that you can cry into and hug.
And won't tell on you. I mean, the worst thing you're going to have is a spite poop.
Me telling on me. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And actually, I got a spite poop from one of my dogs today. I didn't give them a walk first thing in the morning. And when I came back down, it's like, oh, well, okay. Message received.
Right. You think it was, because of where your dog pooped, that it was a spite poop? Or it was, I really have to go to the bathroom, but I'm just going to go here.
It's the irate better than just being let out into the yard.
Oh,
and you know
fair
that.
Enough. There
and
we
you
go.
Only let me into the yard and it was raining.
Yes.
And here's your spite poop.
Here's your spite poop. What kind of dog do you have?
I have two Rottweilers.
Oh, Rottweilers.
Yeah.
Those are those little fists of dogs, right? They're like little tough. They're
they're
giant?
Huge. Huge.
Are they giant dogs?
They're 100 pounds each.
Holy crap.
Yep.
That's a giant dog.
Are they
like pit bulls?
Are they
just lumped emotionally with pit bulls?
They're lumped emotionally with pit bulls.
Because they can be made to be super mean, right?
Well, yeah, they're
by mean people.
By mean people, correct.
Right.
So they are dogs that are frequently used for service, for the military, for companion animals that they originally they were herding dogs in throughout Western Europe. Apparently the Roman army and then the Germans.
Like for cows?
For cows.
Okay.
Yes. So they're huge and they're very smart. They're known as a very smart, very compassionate dog.
Okay.
That Dobermans actually were bred out of Rottweilers. So
okay.
Dobies are a very new breed. They're only about 120 years old, and they're roughly about 50% Rottweiler, and then they have some Whippet and Terrier in them as well.
Okay.
So huge, big jowls that both my boys actually sleep with me every single night on my bed.
Right.
Because they've decided they were bed dogs, and I lost the will to fight them.
Right. You're like, I'm going to fight a different battle.
I'm cold, and you're warm and hairy, and so, okay.
So you can totally do whatever you need to do.
Exactly.
And, well, that's cool. What are their names, if I might?
Oh, of course. I got both of them as adults, and I don't rename cats don't respond, so I rename them all the time. But
okay.
the first one is Grizz, like a grizzly bear.
Okay.
And the second one is Ben, like gentle Ben.
Oh, like gentle Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. All right. Well, those are bears, by the way.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
So, all right. Yeah. I was like, well, I think those are bears. And then I think Grizzly Adams died.
Yes, he did, didn't he?
Yeah, he was
very recently.
70, he was 79, not 69, like everybody else who died this week. Very sad.
Moment of silence for Alan Rickman.
Oh, Christ. Just killing me. I know. I love Alan Rickman. Anyway, so cool.
Yeah. So one of the things I did want to point out,
yeah.
and that as you can tell from some of these pictures that I have not always been truly gifted in the dark room. So some of these smudges around the edges.
Have you
right
developed
here?
All of these?
Yes.
Did you develop the color one as well? Or?
No, the color one I had done in a lab.
Okay.
And the little ones, I admit, most of these little ones I had done in a lab, that all the bigger pictures, and you can tell because the lab can make truly flat prints, and that my print press is not perfect. So once you make the negative, run the light through it, so illuminate the paper and then run it through the chemical baths, and then you put it in the bathtub to rinse all the chemicals off and then drip dry it, that it's like wavy because of paper.
Oh,
so
right.
Then what you do is you put it in a print press, a heated print press, and press it flat.
Okay, and dry it.
Yeah, well, it should be dry when you do that.
Okay.
So you drip dry the paper, and it's just kind of waverly and kind of...
Oh, and then it's kind of warped.
Exactly.
And then, so what you have to do is you have to put it on some sort of press to flatten it.
Yes.
And then do you leave it there, or is it hot enough that you do it quickly and it's supposed to just flatten?
I have the wonderful answer for you. So it is heated, and you heat it up and make it flat, and then you pull it out quickly and put it under two sheets I have of glass so it cools flat.
Oh, okay. There we go. Oh, good.
Yeah.
So what are the How many, with a black and white photo, how many chemicals do you need?
Oh,
are they different with color versus black and white, or is it?
With color versus black and white, yes. There's different chemical baths. That for the, and this is a couple of years ago, so when you have pets who shake the door constantly, it's.
Oh,
not,
right.
It's,
you're just like, you're going to have to create a buffer before the door. Like, you should get a gate that stops before the door, and then they can bark all they want, but they're not headbutting the door, which is just going to fuck with the.
And they'll do it until they get to you.
I'm very cussy today. Anyway, go ahead.
But I haven't done a lot of the dark room recently. I've done a lot of digital work, actually, just because it's the time commitment to set up the.
Do you know Photoshop too?
I do.
Did you?
Yes, I do.
Did you go through one of those classes to
the,
learn
the certificate included both digital photography as well as the
darkroom
analog
stuff.
Yes, okay. That's correct.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was comprehensive. I've actually done 5 weddings, and I'll tell you something. And as I was putting this together, I thought I don't have enough projector and whatnot, so I'll have to describe it to you real quick.
Right.
But
which is really for the best here on the podcast.
Of course. Now, one of the things, thank you. Sure. That one of the things that's important is that I've realized that because it was the first wedding was for my little sister's best friend who didn't have, she had a beautiful dress and she has a wonderful husband. Kind of the important point.
Sure.
Yeah. Weird.
Yeah. The wedding, not the most important part. Turns out the marriage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so far as this was years ago, and that he seemed like a wonderful man who was very good to her, and good on you.
Yeah.
But I ended up chasing her down. It wasn't like I was being spooky, but that I was chasing. I end up chasing a bride down a flight of stairs, and so that you have this big flowing dress and several bridesmaids, and the staircase is kind of dark, but she's running down into light with her white dress.
Very Beauty and the Beast.
It is. Yes. with the bouquet in one hand.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that actually was taught in the very first class I ever took, was the concept of go take a self-portrait, no face. How would you take a picture of you if you can't use your face?
Okay.
And so with wedding photography, that's one of the things that I think, okay, well, who has a tattoo? Well, that it's one thing to see that, the wedding ring, but does somebody have a distinctive piece of jewelry or tattoo? Then I don't have to get their face to get them in the picture.
Okay.
So pictures of that, one time it was a bridesmaid who had one of those glyph tattoos on the back of her neck.
Okay.
With short hair. And so she's in the bridesmaid's dress, because she's got to be one of them.
Right.
But that she had turned away from me, and the bride's looking at me, and I thought, got it, click.
Yep.
Well, now I got both the bride looking, smiling at the bridesmaid, and you know who she's smiling at.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah, that idea of, that it doesn't...
That's a fascinating way to take pictures of of a wedding to make sure, because... I mean, there's always that, well, whose shoulder is that? So, or whose arm is that, you know?
Yeah, or a lot of the lineup pictures of where you've got bridesmen, groomsmen. We've got dudes in white and black oftentimes.
Right, it's beautiful.
The words fail me sometimes. But that thank you. That lined up kind of military style, and then the bridesmaids all in the same dress.
Okay.
And especially if they don't have like different colored hair it's kind of militaristic looking, and it kind of looks like everybody's wedding in my mind.
Yeah.
So by having a picture where I can, I'll combat crawl through a wedding as the ceremonies, try to do it and not be the center of attention.
Right, right. Exactly. Yeah. You're like, why? What's happening?
Don't be dramatic, Megan. Yeah. This is not your day. But that idea of to get off centered, that one of my favorite pictures is it was a groomsman who he worked as a flight attendant, but only in like super high end. I mean, he was Mr.
Oh,
like classy.
Chartered flights and stuff like that. He was more of a butler.
Think
in the
Fantasy
sky.
Island.
Fair
you
enough.
Would be. And he brought it everywhere. He was and that the groom, of course, is pretty stressed out about the whole thing. And that the groomsman that there's some tie straightening, and then it's in a way where how the stereotype of men being so butch and tough and John Wayne-esque could be like, well, a man can care for another man and do it in a way that is not going to immediately initiate somebody using the gay fic. It's
it's just friendship and love.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Or even service might be another word. That idea of that I know you're here. Let me. I wouldn't let you go down the aisle with something askew. And
right.
You know that I won't.
Right,
let
right.
You do
I will fix your tie.
Exactly.
Kind of thing.
Exactly. Deep breath.
Yeah.
I'm going to breathe
it's all
deeply.
Work out. Yeah.
I'll breathe deeply, and then you'll breathe deeply too. And that this day is going to be stressful, but it should also be at least kind of fun.
Yeah.
So, yes,
yeah,
exactly
or,
like that.
If not for you, for someone, for
exactly.
everyone you invited to feed chicken to.
And well, yes. That. Yeah. So this is an example. And it was one of my signature pieces.
Okay.
This is a picture that of, again, it's the Pioneer Square area. And
okay.
that's one of the, and I should know the name of this building, that this, and it's in the reflection of a pool. So I'm looking down at the street, and there's
okay.
a pool of water. And then the pool of water is the reflection
oh.
of one of the
so
big,
the building is upside down.
Yes, exactly.
Got it.
And then on the right-hand side, on the sidewalk, is a sign, which, by the way, spoiler alert, was actually for a Subway sandwich shot. And it says, enter here, and is pointing away from this big landmark icon where people would normally enter
right.
in. So it's a street shot, and I had to take it in nanoseconds because a bus was coming and about to splash in.
Right.
But this is a good example of anybody who looked at it would say, oh, you pulled this print yourself, Megan, because there's the on the white edge margin, there's actually a bite mark of
okay.
where it was drying, and I hung it up.
Okay.
So also it's a little waverly right here. I probably should run it through the press one more time and try and flatten it a little bit more. And it's not a perfectly pulled print. There's a little spot right here. So I need to
is
run
pulled
through.
Mean, printed?
Yes. The, that where, that I'm the one who not just took the picture to create the negative, but I'm the one who used the dark room and then actually took the piece of paper, illuminated it, put it through the chemical bath.
Okay.
And as you can tell right here, I need to do a little dusting because it wasn't perfect. There was a little spot.
There's a little white spot.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well,
how can that happen?
A mote of dust got in between the, either on the negative or it got on the paper. And so as the negative, the light was illuminated through the negative, that it didn't get the light that it should have.
Now, a negative could be any size, right? I mean, it's like mm-hmm. a digital print, but if it blows up too big, will it get pixelated?
It will.
Too?
It will get a very soft focused. And actually, I have some examples here.
Yeah.
That, if I can pull through with one hand, that, one of the things that...
Talking about photography with Megan Steele, by the way, just so you know. She doesn't have an online... You can't see any of her pictures, you guys. You can't follow her. You'd have to meet her in real life.
I've anyway. Never utilized Logic in my life. I find it to be quite overrated. So here's another example. And this is a picture, and it's... this. Is, I did a big series of where I would take a picture of myself, it's not a portrait. I'm just using myself as a model.
Right.
And then I would position the tripod for the camera such that part of me was being reflected through a mirror or through glass.
Okay.
And so this is that you have a profile of me on the left-hand side of the picture, and you have almost a full face reflected in the mirror.
Okay.
So this is actually, I called it The Secret. And
right.
that, so it looks like two women are about to whisper to each other.
Right.
But in fact, there's only one.
It is just you. It is you and more you.
Exactly.
Well done.
Thank you.
It's a good one.
So that, here's another example. Again, where that using a mirror, I think, has been lost in some of the fine arts photography.
Okay.
In an effort to try and get everything super crisp and that super brightly illuminated and cant the camera. And I think,
it's kind of neat the way
yeah,
it's kind of blurry back at you.
Yeah.
Do you go see a lot of photography exhibits? Do you ever try to, or have you seen?
Hmm. No, I should see more. That it's the...
We should all do all kinds of things, but
yes.
I was just curious.
No, that's perfectly
yeah.
okay. That in the idea of using oneself as a model, so yes, that's me, but it's not a portrait.
Mm-hmm.
That the idea of a lot of times that in modern photography I've found is that a person talks about perfectly cropping or perfectly framing. And I think to myself, I don't need all of my face or all of my hand for the image I want to create. That,
mm-hmm.
and in fact, does anybody need to see every pore in my face? I don't think so.
No.
Because
in some cases, I don't want them to see every pore in
right.
my face. For the love of God.
If I meet somebody,
mm-hmm.
if I'm focusing on how many pores there are on their nose, then either I'm a shallow person or they're a shallow person.
And you're not listening to what they're saying out of their face. They're probably talking to you.
Right.
You're looking a little close. A little close.
And that the nature of human memory is not and should not always remember every single pore. That's what with the new high def cameras for
yeah.
like TV, where they have the newscasters have to like just cake
airbrush.
They have the new airbrushing
to fill in all the pores and stuff, so
exactly.
they don't look like they're 107 years old.
And smile, and suddenly there's a Grand Canyon, which is terrible. That's not really recording the essence of the human being.
Right.
And
right.
So
it's too much.
That it's something that what you can also do is take a mirror and texture it with like Vaseline or lotion or something else. Basically, you're just creating texture on the mirror and then use that to actually take the picture. It looks like you're having hairs being windblown and whatnot.
Oh, okay.
And so that kind of that idea of the idea that I want to try and say it in the exact right way, that capturing the essence of what is excellent, it doesn't have to be perfect, but it has to be excellent.
Right.
It shouldn't have to include removing every single hair from my chin. That's not the essence of what I bring to the world. And so with the photography, and here, fans, I know this is probably horrible, but I'm going to give you a really good trick here. And you can do it for digital and you can do it for analog.
Okay.
Take a picture of somebody, especially if it's not super crisp, like they're running by. So it's a good, but it's not a perfect picture.
Yep.
And I desaturate it in Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
That means take most of the color out. So now it's black and white. Then increase the contrast so you have more shadows and more light and less of the mid-tone with the grays.
Okay.
What it does is it creates that it darkens the eye sockets.
Okay.
And so it makes your eyes look bigger and then also carves out your cheekbones so that you have more definition. And it also, it'll actually carve off a second chin because a lot of people will look down.
I like that.
Well, and that's completely unfair, especially in weddings when people look down. Well, it creates a second chin that isn't actually there. Exactly.
Yeah.
So by doing this very simple piece, what it does is it actually defines the face from the neck.
Right.
And you can do it in the dark room as well. You're not desaturating it, but that you're just increasing the contrast and darkening the image. And it's very flattering. And if
which people like, and the thing is people are better looking than they are often photographed.
Thank you for saying that. That's something else. And I tell all of my clients, I haven't done any wedding photography. It's really stressful because if you don't get it right, then there's no do-overs.
Everyone's devastated.
I prefer to be a second unit photographer and say, I'll give you a significant discount if I can just do it as an event, and then I'll give you the images, I'll correct some of them, and all the posing and all of the kind of standard.
You're going to want someone who does it for a living and can nail that every single time.
Right, and that's journeyman trade where you have the right lighting equipment and that you know how to wrangle
wrangling and getting everybody
that's
in a
very
row.
Cat wrangling.
Yeah.
But the second thing is that the nature of the camera is two-dimensional. So whether it's a flat piece of paper or whether it's a flat screen, and humans are three-dimensional creatures.
Mm-hmm.
So the human eye instinctively knows that our nose, where our cheekbone, where our jaw, where our ear is not one plane. It's several different planes. But on a piece of paper, it gets smashed flat, like taking some Play-Doh and smashing it onto a table, which is why the camera adds 10 pounds.
Right, because there's no perspective, really, or there's no depth.
Yes.
That's crazy.
And so that's why I argue that it was Picasso who said, art is a lie that tells the truth.
Oh, yeah.
And that I love that because I only use my powers for good.
Sure.
But when I am making changes to the photograph where I'll crop a person out or I'll carve off a second chin or I'll...
You just clean them up.
Yeah, clean them up. And especially I'll tell the brides, please don't cake on makeup in case you get a blemish. I can remove that because you normally don't have it. That's ethically sound to remove it
from
the picture.
It's completely ethically. It's fine. You're just... Now, Megan, what you should probably know is that the hour has gone by.
Oh, no.
Right.
Okay.
It's been amazing, but you're right. I mean, this happens. I usually warn people before I was explaining the teaser clip, and I forgot to say, you're talking about the thing you love. The hour's over almost immediately, and I'm doing another one, but I just want you to know that this was fascinating.
Thank you. Excellent.
Yes, and it was very beautiful. Do you want to plug any of those books?
That
they should read if they want to read more about photography or
first of
anything?
All, I highly recommend that the Hopper's book. That Edward Hopper was actually a painter, but he used photography to set stuff up. And he actually is his wife who was frequently in the images. Nighthawks is his most famous picture. So if you Google
But who wrote this book? Is it Ivo or is it Taskin?
Taskin is actually they're the ones who compiled it.
Okay.
But Edward Hopper and Nighthawks is his most famous painting, and he has definitely influenced 20th century images. Mm-hmm. So that you don't have to commit to a book. You can actually just, I marked the pages there if you want to flip through it real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
And second of all is that Beowulf right now really gets a lot of attention. Iliad, Odyssey. Well, what does not get as much attention in the epic literature is the Toynbee Coolin, which is Ireland's epic story.
Sure. I've seen this because Andy's got a pile of like sort of epic stories that he uses for game design.
Yes.
Toynbee Coolin?
Toyn like coin.
Toynbee
Coolin.
Coolin.
Yes.
All right.
That, and reading that, you will literally be able to see the influence that was all over the Lord of the Rings, especially as the armies march forward with their distinctive army and their uniforms and their weapons
armor and all that.
And their leader. It is epic. And it is just as epic and just as different as Beowulf.
When was this first put down?
If you'd like to have if you'd like to have three historians get into a fist fight.
Oh, ask them?
Yes. It does not have an authoritative written down, like Beowulf is actually written down, like that is the copy written.
Yeah.
The Iliad and the Odyssey that were clearly oral traditions before they were ever written down. Beowulf, again, was very clearly very different, and I cannot. And the one of the main characters in the Toynbee Coolin is a woman named Medivh.
Okay.
MEDB, though sometimes it's translated as Maeve.
Okay.
She rocks.
Okay.
So that cool. I do try to be very respectful of this. And finally, the last one I'm going to recommend is the artwork of Edvard Klimt.
Edvard Klimt, you guys.
Yes.
Get out there.
Yes.
Get out there and see
Edvard. Painter.
Austrian painter. Okay.
Very famous for his works. You can YouTube this stuff.
Right. And they all look vaguely recognizable.
Yes.
Because I've been to many museums and gone, oh, that's cool. And I've seen the name before, but I don't know anything about art.
Well, you will not be disappointed, at least in my book.
Fair enough.
Thank you very much, Jackie. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And Megan Steele, you guys, this was a fascinating episode. Thanks again out there for listening. And you know the rules. Take care of each other. Okay, bye.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?